Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Couple Speak Relationship Forum on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Susan Lager, a psychotherapist and relationship coach at the Couple Center in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, where I broadcast live each month on Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Tonight's 30-minute episode, How Curiosity Can Save Your Marriage, is definitely for you if you're in a marriage which feels flat or disconnected. In this 30-minute episode, I'll share tips from my book, Become Relationship Smart Without a Lifetime of Therapy, about the key role of curiosity as a connector in all meaningful relationships, especially in marriage. For people not familiar with this concept, I'll be revealing 14 conversation openers demonstrating curiosity and interest in a partner, facilitating empathy, closeness, and feeling seen or acknowledged. To join the conversation with questions or comments, if you're on the live call, just dial 1 on your phone and you'll be in line to join me with anything you'd like to share. If you cannot make the live show, you can listen to the recording afterward at blogtalkradio.com/Susan Lager. And now to our subject. I've often seen couples trying to revive the romance they felt in the early stages of their relationships by turning to big, dramatic strategies to demonstrate their affection for their mate. They take exotic vacations, they buy expensive gifts, or make elaborate Valentine's Day or anniversary efforts in the hopes that with intensive, regularly scheduled maintenance, love will somehow flourish. Or if the relationship stress has reached a saturation point, they count on efforts like these to solve problems. Now, while these activities can send a jolt of joy into a relationship, unfortunately, their results don't last long. By the time a couple arrives back home or the fancy flowers wilt, the old hum-ho-hum feeling usually returns. It's very hard to sustain love through the day-to-day grind of full-time jobs and the needs of children, pets, or aging parents. At times, tending to your closest relationship can seem like just another duty in a long list of weekly chores. Without trust that your partner will reciprocate your efforts, it can also seem like a risk to be the one to make the first attempt. I can tell you that from years of working with thousands of couples, I can say with certainty that a little emotional investment and small changes in the way you treat your spouse will not only lead to his or her happiness, but to warmly return mutual support that will kind of cushion you from your own life's daily blows and demands. Instead of lavishing money and attention on your spouse a few times a year, my suggestion would be to lavish curiosity on them throughout your time together. Try to adopt an approach of open, engaged interest. When you're curious, you learn new things about your mate, his desires, fears, and struggles. You'll hear secrets, wishes, regrets. You'll learn practical things like what she really would like to do on a weekend together. Even if you've known each other for years, you'd be surprised how much there still is to know about your partner. In the hundreds of hours of couples work I do and in my retreats, I continue to be amazed at how frequently I hear, "I never knew that about her," or "I just heard this incredible story from spouses who have been married for 1, 15, or maybe 40 years. Curiosity opens up dialogue between partners and a possibility for acceptance. It helps couples navigate conflict, cultivate a stronger connection, and prevents incorrect assumptions, misreads, and misunderstandings which can lead to resentment and anger. Being curious with your partner means being curious about their world instead of assuming you know what they're thinking, feeling, and experiencing. Because when we assume, we cut off from who our partners really are, according to psychotherapist and best-selling author Ashley Davis Bush. One of the best strategies I know to achieve a state of curiosity is to spend a small amount of time each day simply listening to your mate. It sounds so easy, doesn't it? But that is really listening. Think truthfully about what listening typically looks like for you. Are you watching TV on the couch, half attentive, while your wife unloads about her pressures at work? Are you busy playing with your dog while your husband tells you excitedly about an interesting conversation he had that day? We all do this. But this kind of passive, distracted listening offers little benefit and can actually damage your relationship in the long run. So at the core, we want to feel that we exist by having the people we care about witness our own lives. Many of us can remember viscerally moments when we felt tuned out, shut down, or criticized by our parents. Subtle things that we do in relationships can mimic these moments and inadvertently dredge up childhood pain. When a spouse repeatedly appears distracted, harried, or dismissive as you attempt to tell them things that are important to you, memories of childhood pain administered again and again by the person you love add up to a level of fear, resentment, and anxiety around him or her. So if you want to be a good listener, you'll need to show listening by making eye contact, putting down your cell phone or your laptop. Even if you're a supreme multitasker, don't do it if you want your partner to feel acknowledged and heard. Don't do it. Unless you're 14 years old, I say, most people don't like competing with attention for attention with devices, and even 14-year-olds generally don't like that. So how does change related to curiosity happen? Change can only come through replacing frequent inattentive communication with less frequent but more thoughtful, conscious, curious communication. When you do connect, really take time to listen before responding. Reflect on what your partner says and relay your understanding back to her or him. Don't jump immediately to dispensing advice or bringing up your own related ideas. Demonstrate with your body language, your attentive gaze, and the questions you ask that you have really, really heard her. Being empathically curious doesn't necessarily have to mean that you're innately interested in the topics she's discussing. You may not be terribly interested in the mom's playgroup or the mom's group your wife loves. However, you are interested in her experience, her life, and her ideas. You take care when interacting with her to mirror back her enthusiasm and excitement. It's important to your spouse to see that you're eager to be a partner to their experience, to hear their impressions and motivations for feeling or thinking the way they do, than that you like or care about the same exact thing. So don't mistake me for meaning that you have to be in lockstep union about all this. It's really valuing your partner's experiences and feelings. Now, in her book, 75 Habits for a Happy Marriage, Ashley Davis Bush shares some ways readers can cultivate curiosity in their relationships. She and her co-author husband include an exercise I like called Penny, as in penny for your thoughts. Whenever you say penny to your partner, they share exactly what they're thinking in that moment without censoring themselves. It opens up revelations, and it can bring about spontaneous communication in a very nice way. So penny is one very good exercise. It may seem a little corny, but try it and see what you think. Also, Bush recommends using open-ended questions, which invite conversation, she says. She gives these examples. What three interesting things happened at work today? You could ask that. What is the hardest thing for you about our recent transition? Getting a new job, getting fired, moving, having a new pet, having a baby. What was the hardest thing for you about that? In other words, instead of asking, did you like the movie, and eliciting a yes or no response, ask your partner, I'm curious, what did you think were the best and worst parts of that movie? So open-ended questions demonstrate more curious communication and elicit more sharing rather than just, a yes or a no, which ends up being a kind of conversation stopper. In my book, Become Relationship Smart Without a Lifetime of Therapy, I have a chapter on curiosity as one of the critical components of having what I call a high relationship IQ, people who are relationship smart. You can buy this book through my Amazon store on my website at susanlager.com. And here are some of the ideas in the book for curious conversation. And curious conversation openers, if you're out of ideas, things that you can ask your spouse about. So here are some. What TV shows or movies they want to watch and why? So it gives you a window into some of the entertainment that they like or don't like and why. What dreams they have for their life? This is a kind of a big picture question. What's on their bucket list? What do they aspire to? What's really important to them? It's kind of a big question. What disappointments and frustration they feel? This obviously is one that you might dread bringing up because it can open up complaints, but try to be open and approach it in a kind of dispassionate way. Talking about it without presuming that all the disappointments and everything bad is going to relate to you. What they like and dislike about their work. Often partners will share, you know, tidbits about their day or details about their day, but they may not share the big picture things about, well, what keeps you there? What do you really enjoy about it? Is there something that makes you feel valued? Are there people there that you really relate to? Are there projects that feel challenging for you? Do you feel like you get to use your mind? So again, it's kind of a meta view. It's a big picture view instead of the little, the little things, the little details that your partner is likely to share with you anyway. Here's another big one you can ask. What spiritual beliefs they have. Now, you may have a general sense that somebody believes in God or what their conception of God is or whether they believe in an afterlife, but to get into more detail about those things, what's their concept? Do they have a concept of heaven or hell or punishment? Do they believe that they'll be coming back, that they're here working on things and that there will be some kind of opportunity to come back? Do they believe in reincarnation? Is their concept of a god, you know, a female god or some kind of animated kind of god? Or is their concept of God one of love? What are their spiritual beliefs? And this is a good question because often you think that just because you live with somebody and you go to church or synagogue or whatever, that you understand all that. But maybe you've never asked it as a kind of open-ended question. And you might find out some things. Another question, what books your partner loves or loathes and why? This is, again, a window into their inner world. Why do they appreciate that book? What was it about that book that really they really related to? Did they feel like they could relate to the author's experience, or was it something about the setting of the book or the other characters? You get a whole different view about, you may see them reading a book and you may see them laughing or chuckling or crying over the book, but you may not know what they love or loathe about it and what other books they really relate to. Now, by the way, we have about another 15 minutes, and we have several listeners on the phone. I'm always happy to see that. If you have a question or a comment, I think we're going to have time to take them. So just dial 1 on your phone, and I'll be happy to bring you on the air with your question or your comment. Here's another question. Ask your partner what they appreciate about their relationship with you. What is it that feels most meaningful about it? Often they will say things, you know, they'll say endearing things like, oh, you're so funny, or you're so thoughtful, but a big picture item about what they appreciate about their relationship with you. Now we have a listener with a question. Hello, listener. You're on the air. Can you tell me what your question or your comment is?
Yes, hello, Susan. I was with
Hi.
A partner for about 12 years, a long time. We were not married, but our relationship was that of one similar to being married. And my partner was brought up to believe in his family that if you ask questions, and not just my partner, I know other people who've taken this posture, that if you ask a lot of questions of someone, that you're being nosy. And I like to believe that I can be a very engaging person. I'm a very curious person. I've been told I ask a lot of questions, sometimes too many questions, but I feel, how do you get to know someone unless you ask questions, and what makes them tick? And I've often wondered if taking that stance that asking questions means you seem like you're being nosy, or is it when you ask there's a responsibility to know something about someone and it's a fear of intimacy? So I was wondering in your experience if you've heard that before, and what do you do with a partner who has that in their background, that they are afraid to ask questions because they don't want to appear nosy? How do you change that in them?
That's a great, great question. You know, I do know people who think of it as disrespectful, and they were taught by people from other generations who, looked at it that way, that it's somehow intrusive. What I would encourage, people to do in their partnerships is to ask their partners if they feel that way, or if they sense that their partners feel that way, and to let them know that is not true with me, you know, that I experience questions as interest and as wanting to know me more. So that's one thing, to, talk to a partner about how, you may have learned that, but that doesn't apply in this case. I also think it would be important to get a sense of the boundaries and the permission you may feel. You know, there are some relationships where it's part of the culture that you would never talk about sex, or you would never talk about, you'd never complain about your mates, or, there are some relationships that people have with a spouse where together they've adopted a culture that somehow you don't go into certain places. I think it's important to pay attention to the cues you've gotten that would either give you permission to go deeper and that would tell you, wow, that's going to be welcomed, or to look at the kinds of questions, not just curiosity, but the kinds of curiosity that may elicit too much discomfort. So to be kind of selective about it. And that's why I'm throwing out a bunch of ideas about questions you can ask. And there's a bug here. Not all partners would welcome all of these questions. So to try to get a read of that, to try to take cues and see which ones, read the cues, read the feedback, which ones would be welcomed or not. Does that feel like an answer to your question?
Yeah, no, that does. That's very helpful. That is. Thank you. That's helpful.
Okay, thank you very much. That was
not
a great question. I really appreciate
thank you.
I really appreciate that.
Great.
So here are some more questions. And again, based on, the caller, try to key into the kinds of things that feel like overly sensitive questions to a partner. So, for instance, if you have a spouse who, they hate their job. They come home, they're complaining about it, and they look completely discouraged and demoralized by their job. You're not going to want to ask them, what do you love and loathe most about your job? It's just going to trigger them. So to kind of read the feedback loops, that's really helpful in this case. One other question you can ask is, what does your spouse or your partner enjoy, respect, or dislike about their friends? Often they will tell you what's going on with their friends, but they may not give you, again, the big picture about why this friend is meaningful to them, or what there is about this friend or friendship that's so challenging. All right, I think I shared the one with you. No, I didn't. Here's another one. What they enjoy most in nature. Most people enjoy something about nature. So you might be having a walk and there might be a smile on their face, or they might be looking very peaceful. But ask them about that, because there's many different things about being in nature that could be meaningful to your partner. Here's a big one: what they fear. You might have gotten on a plane with your spouse and seen them get all keyed up, or you might see them get very anxious when they're walking in a dark street with you. So you have some read on basic fears, but to ask an open-ended question in life, you know, what are you most afraid of in life? And you might be really surprised at some of the answers that you get. Another question would be, what do they find amusing? And again, these are questions that if you feel like, well, I don't know what to talk about, any one of these could be something that's a kind of conversation opener that would demonstrate curiosity and interest in your spouse. What they find amusing. What are the kinds of things, you know, we've been watching the campaigns and, you know, the election and the coming election and all the candidates. You could frame it around that. We've been watching that, and obviously we curse at the TV together, but is there something you find amusing about it? Because maybe I'm losing my sense of humor about it. But to key into their sense of humor. What sadness they may feel about past events. Now, again, try to avoid a feeling of dread that it's going to, again, open up a big can of worms. But and if there are things that you already know that they are very loath to talk about, avoid those things. But are there any particular past events that they regret or feel sadness about? Anything that they've been grieving that you wouldn't know about? What they like about themselves. This is a really interesting question. You know, honey, I know what I like about you. I know what I love about you. But what do you like about yourself? I often hear you criticize yourself or be down on yourself, but what do you appreciate about yourself? And another one I talk about in my book, what brings them joy and meaning? Where do you feel most fulfilled? And that can open up countless conversations. I think the point is that the list goes on and on. If you think of being curious as a way of knowing your partner's heart, and it's a kind of opener to your partner's heart. So it's really important to get beyond the day-to-day little details of life, like how was your day? That's such a canned thing, how was your day? Yeah, you want to know how the day was, but, you know, try to go deeper. One thing, though. Try not to show curiosity by using interrogation tactics. You want to avoid what we affectionately call the Laura drill in my family. We often tease my sister Laura about her asking thousands of questions because she's really curious, but not waiting to hear the answers. She gets distracted and goes off on tangents with ever more questions. She has a bit of ADD, but we love her anyway because she means well. She's practicing meditation and better listening, so it's a work in progress. But try not to ask a question and then just jump to the next question, or just to think of it as this rapid-fire kind of volley of questions. It will overwhelm your partner. And by the way, here's another benefit of curiosity in relationships. I said earlier that it can really open up intimacy. I have also experienced how this process of curious communication is really sexy for couples. Something about re-experiencing that your partner is really present and there with you reignites the feelings you had when you were new to each other. So don't be surprised when these practices lead to more intimacy and creativity in bed. When you show curiosity, you'll quickly find that the care, attention, and interest you display toward your spouse will naturally be returned to you. It's reciprocity. It's a softening process. Really demonstrating curiosity toward your partner and seeing it return to you will remind you of the early days of your courtship when finding out new things about each other was a constant thrill. Over time, you'll find yourself feeling more open, supported and supportive, your relationship will become, rather than another stress, a reprieve from all the stresses in life, a soothing retreat, and not one you have to get on a plane for or spend lots of money to have. So recognize that showing curiosity is a heart opener. It really connects you in a heart way, in a much deeper way, to your spouse. And what it does is, in a very beautiful way, it can really replicate the early stages of infatuation and courtship when you were endlessly interested in each other. And people like to feel seen. They like to feel that they're important to a spouse and that their heart is important to a spouse. So I would recommend that you take the long view and you invest in your relationship in that way. So I'm going to have to sign off now. If there are any other questions, you have a very quick amount of time to ask a question or make a comment before I have to wrap up. I don't see any, so I will be signing off now, believe it or not. I hope you enjoyed this episode and learned some things about how curiosity can enrich or save your marriage. If you have a marriage that's really in the tank and really going stale, it can really be like a shot in the arm to your marriage. It can be like a shot of antibiotics and really rejuvenate and refresh your marriage. So I'd like you to think of this as a much better antidote to some staleness or ho-humness, routine, boredom in a marriage than bringing home flowers. I mean, flowers are nice. They can be very nice. Gifts can be very nice. Planning vacations can be nice. But if you think of this as regular maintenance work on your marriage, you're going to get a lot more payoff from it in the way of intimacy, in the way of knowing each other, in the way of closeness, and in the way of zest, a feeling of zest around the connection. Now, if you want more information about how to not only have a better marriage, but better relationships in general, you can buy a copy of my book. Once again, Become Relationship Smart Without a Lifetime of Therapy, through my website, Amazon store at susanlager.com, or go directly to amazon.com. My next episode will be on Wednesday. It's Wednesday, July 6th at 8:30 p.m. I'll be announcing the topic and possible guest host soon. I haven't yet decided. So good night, everyone, and I hope you try to practice curiosity in your own relationships. Take care. Bye-bye.